James Order is back. Help us all. I'm Gavin Feeder, and this is The Wheel. I've made a horrible mistake, but a while back, I invited Congressman Orderon to talk about his new party, the New Democratic Front. As anyone who listened the last time I had Congressman Orderon would expect, we went wildly off the rails for about an hour and 20 minutes. But tucked away in there is some interesting commentary on how we got to this point in the shutdown, as it's nearing an end on Thursday night, and a unique take from the congressman on why the shutdown was actually good for the people. I'll let that argument come from his mouth. Good luck, Godspeed, and without any more delay, James Order. Congressman Order, welcome back to the show.
I don't know why you brought me back, but thanks.
Our numbers are starting to dip, and it's always okay, something when you are in here. Things tend to go viral. First of all, glad that scheduling finally worked out. We originally talked about having this conversation like back in August when the NDF first rolled out, and it took this long to get us in a room together. For our purposes, I'm just going to start like way back then and then kind of take us forward to today, assuming by some miracle I can keep you halfway on track.
You can, but that's okay. We can try.
Yeah, I'm going to do my best. You had an independent run for a while before getting together with a few other fairly high-profile politicians to form the New Democratic Front.
Yeah.
Can you just talk through what caused you to want to put this third party together and how that development kind of happened?
Yeah, so first of all, the real fun little tell-all story here is that at the beginning of last session, not this one, but the one where Oliver was elected to be speaker, Cody and I had a fairly, you know, substantial relationship going on at that point. We both, I brought him into the ALC, and we both served a significant period of time on the Northern Court together. And so his relationship with Ollie led the three of us to start pondering the idea of a third party. And it never really came to fruition. There was never really what we saw a substantial need for it at the moment until relatively recently when we were able to not only put everything together, but you also saw the fallout of the LRP in the Miguel and Ethan Mathias and Soren. That group, when that group kind of left, the group that's sort of notorious for shifting what they believe in every 2 months or so, they really remind me of Graham, if you remember Graham.
I unfortunately do.
Yeah, there was one election where I wanted to make a poster to use against him. He dropped out of the race because I scared him. But I wanted to make a poster of all of the parties that he'd been in, and it wouldn't fit on the poster because he'd been in like 18 or something. Anyways, so they all joined us, and hopefully they'll be loyal to us for, well, they're due to switch here in like a month or so.
But, give or take.
Right, yeah. Essentially, you know, the ALC was, and, you know, eventually the SDP and whatever the fuck it became, when I tried to rebrand it, and then Steb decided that he would commit political suicide.
Yeah, that was rough.
We really, you know, yeah, that was rough. We saw an opportunity to create more of like a centrist left party. I feel like that is, honestly, the two main, like, political ideals, and I know there's so many people who are going to hate saying this, but the two main political ideals in America are the center left and libertarians. Like that's all it's ever been. Even when like the old GOP was around, and you had the Sochcons trying to do shit, they were just stopped by like the Progressive Party and shit like that. So there's always been a place for us, and you know the moderate lefties just started going to the GLP. And while we still work with them, they are of course, of a different mind. So yeah, we essentially came in on the pack that Cody and I really do understand, especially Cody. He's obviously a history figure in recent politics, but we have a good grasp on what sort of middle of the road center left politics are. And we know that we can share that again. You know, we were willing to share that as early as the beginning of last session, like I said, but we were just waiting for the right opportunity, and luckily we got a significant swath to support our way, and now we're two representatives in the House. Juan Escobar Mendoza, the former governor, should slide right past, grab NS4 from Morjon, so we'll have our three. And, you know, I'd say that we had a, frankly, a better start than the ALC did in terms of a federal election. So, yeah, we're looking forward to the future.
Okay. One of our listeners asked about the ideological and strategic differences between the NDF and the GLP. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because obviously we're in a pretty contentious time right now in Congress, so it makes sense to line up on quote-unquote ideological lines.
So,
but and from my perspective, it seems as though the NDF and the GLP are pretty much in lockstep up to this point. So if you're trying to carve a different path and kind of push them out of what you describe as that center-left lane that they've occupied since the SDP shut itself down, when does that break start to happen? And when does your group start to kind of take more control?
Right, so here's the thing. We have testicles.
Good to know.
And yeah, the majority of us, some of us don't, and that's fine. But generally, testicles are nice to have in politics.
That seems a little sexist, but we'll let it happen.
I'm talking about like figurative. You can also call it pussying up, balling up, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Actually, pussying up is from a great show. It's called Magicians. It's on Netflix. Watch up to like season 4. I think the season 4 finale is really, really good. I didn't watch season 5 because it kind of fell off. But there's a character in there, Margot. She's like a queen, and she uses the female anatomy in the same way that dudes use like the male anatomy to describe like manning up or stuff like stereotypical shit. Like, anyways,
okay.
So we were really involved in the budget problem, independents and GLP members alike, and so unfortunately, you know, and you and I have differences on who we think there is to blame here.
No doubt.
What we can both agree on is that the person responsible, their name starts with an E. We just don't know if it's Elkridge or Epsilon. That's fine. But we were really involved in the budget crisis, and that is the primary problem at the moment. And so when you have that as the primary problem and you're stuck in it, there's not much you can do on the federal level to kind of diverge from the crowd until that's solved. So once we move past this budget crisis and the LRP gets the sticks out of their ass and passes the clean budget, we're fine. That's, you know, that fixes it. Hold on.
Okay. Brief intermission.
Brief intermission.
And we're back.
Anyways.
I'm going to come back to the budget.
Yeah.
Because I have no doubt we have plenty to discuss on that. But just kind of continue along the lines with the party. I'm going to skip that one because you kind of touched on it. The rollout of the party was a bit interesting. And I want to touch on a couple of platform points just to kind of dig in a little bit deeper than what you consider half of the half the national electorate. So I'm just going to read off a couple excerpts from your public platform, at least when it was rolled out. First of all, the United States has recently strayed away from looking into better and more healthy ways to tax its citizens without hurting them. Is that an indication of a specific plan to change the tax system, or is that one of those, we're going to open up a commission and look at it and consider it and come back with a report in 2 years and we'll think about it then?
No. So what that essentially means is that unlike former President Lamport, we enjoy talking to the working class instead of enjoying them with a little bit of mustard on top. And so what we're really looking forward to is dismantling everything everyone in the country loves. Not really. What that's an indication of is that we want to stray away from the land value tax, or at least not have that be the primary proponent of fucking income in the country. That's the goal of that point. It is much less a statement of we're going to create a commission, twiddle our thumbs, put it up their ass, see if the weather's nice down there, and then come back in 2 years and say, oh boy, my name's Robert Mueller and I've come up with jack shit. Instead, we're more interested in going ahead and actually providing alternatives that could help us. So it's not a commitment to anything other than we want to do something else. And so that's really where that comes from. Okay. And, you know, obviously, if we start losing elections, then that's the mandate that says, hey, country's not interested in that. But as it stands, that's what we're, you know, interested in looking towards.
All right. So you don't necessarily have a specific form of tax or a tax plan that you're looking to put forward right now. It's more starting from absolutely the baseline not of Cody step away from the LVT and go from there.
And, yeah, we're looking to step away from the LVT. And not even, you know, get rid of it completely, but also not have it be the primary source of income for the United States government.
Okay. Another one I wanted to touch on, this is very, I couldn't find a clean way to excerpt this, so we're just going to take this tiny little chunk. Abolition of state term limits, should they exist? Now, I'm a no term limits guy pretty much at all, but can you make that case, and why specifically only on the state level?
Yeah, so that's actually my favorite part of the platform, rather, because that's the part that I specifically helped author in terms of the voting rights and election transparency, that whole idea. So I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, but there was a time a while ago, now I can't remember who, it might have been like Caprice or Barch or someone, was term limited in the Jefferson Parliament.
I believe that was like Caprice. A whole
snowball effect, yeah. So here's the thing. You can come from two ideas or groups of thought. The first being that you're an idiot and you want term limits. And the second being that you've read the Federalist Papers and you're fine with it. So the abolition of state term limits, should they exist, is essentially a permanent mandate within our platform that says we recognize that the vast majority, if not all, of state positions are not term limited as of now. But if at any point in the future there are proposals to term limit them, we are committed to standing against that. Federal term limits, obviously, you know, the presidency is something we could work to change, but most presidents get really tired after a term anyways. I mean, you got tired after 2 weeks, so.
Hey, now. Frankly, I would have started it earlier.
We can do that. Right, yeah, go ahead and I'm calling it now. Senator Cavan will become President Cavan for the second time in November. You heard it here first. I will be in his.
It's been a minute since I had you back for an election prediction show.
Yeah, I know. You should bring me back. The shallot actually kind of did really well for some goddamn reason. Terms of what we predicted for races, it was.
I continue to pretend that group does not exist.
We're good.
Much as I appreciate you, but
it's fine. it's a passion project.
That's fair.
It's remember when you like start doing drugs, like you just start like injecting heroin.
You know, I moved out of Jefferson a while ago.
Oh, you did. Well, I'm in the north, but I'm not, you know, close to Vermont sometimes, so it happens. Another one of the main points that I love in here, and that I'm sure you're going to be a really big fan of.
Oh boy.
I think I see Adala in the studio audience as well, so I'm sure she'll love it too, is that we absolutely support the abolition of the Senate.
I do enjoy my job. I plan on being here for a while.
Yeah, just go run for fucking president, dude. It's fine. You're going to do great.
I did that once. It wasn't fun.
Once and for all. I will... You shut up. You did
what? This is my show. Don't you shut me up.
No, this was my show. Well, I
no, it was not. It has my name in it.
I did. What the fuck is this show called?
It's The Weekly with Cabin Fever. Welcome to
The Weekly. Did you rip that off of the New York Times? Anyways,
I couldn't afford to do daily. I don't have that kind of time in my life.
The evolution of the Senate is something that we are focused on, though, because if you look at it, I feel like we would be. Like, there's no reason to have a bicameral legislature if they're elected in essentially the same way.
Well, I mean, someone needs to catch the House's mistakes when budgets get through and they have errors that make them unworkable.
Okay, well, here's the thing. First of all, not unworkable. I'm pretty sure the last, like, problem was, like, a single number that you could have just, you could just edit.
Amend, which we're doing in the Senate.
Anyways, really, what?
Yes.
The president could just fucking veto. It's fine. You can veto.
Your plan is for the president to veto this budget. That's your suggestion for fixing this problem.
My suggestion. My suggestion for fixing this problem is for you and Adala and the two other LRP members of the Senate who I cannot name at this moment because I don't really remember who they are.
That would be One Eye Jack and Ted Dad.
Oh, I feel bad. But the abolition of the Senate and the expansion of the House of Representatives, and perhaps, you know what, I would actually be very much in favor. Now, this is the radical part of me that will never be seen on the floor of the House because this is frankly probably a stupid idea.
Okay.
I would love to create a government or recreate our government, paying homage to really what the Romans did. So instead of having one president, you have two consuls. And those two consuls are the two executives, and then your Senate and your House or the groups that would be subsisting in those areas in this new government would be elected in different ways. One would be appointed by state executives, as was originally thought for the fucking whatever the fuck.
I can't help you with that little information.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to go back and try and explain that a little bit more. Remember when you were there when we both signed the Constitution with George Washington and John Adams? Fucking great guy. Love
him. Sure.
Good friends with him and Jeff. So when we signed the Constitution, the whole thing was that, like, the governors would appoint, or the state legislatures or whatever the fuck would appoint the senators. So I think we should go back and do something like that, except we don't call them senators, we call them bitches. So you would be the president of the bitches, because you're a bitch. And then for the House, we go ahead and it would be very similar to what the House is now. Actually, I probably wouldn't change it at all. The main thing is abolish the Senate, and if you really want a bicameral legislature, go ahead and just have, this is, in fact, RP, Jeb, this is not meta. This is an RP conversation, and I'm creating a problem for Kevin because he's going to have to edit this part out.
I'm not editing anything. Whatever your nonsense you're talking about, that's going out.
Well, there you go. I'm just responding to Jeb. I can see him, like, making faces at me in the audience.
Should we move on to the other platform point that I wanted to talk about?
Yeah, look, we can if you really want to.
I'm going to try to steer you back.
I don't actually support this, but I do think this would be a fun idea. Actually, I think it would be really fun if we did this, like, implemented this on a state level. I would be very interested in actually, like, not doing a bullshit, twiddly-dee, thumb-up-the-ass kind of, like, report.
You have a lot of interest in thumbs-up-the-ass. That's, like, the third time this has come up, and we're less than 20 minutes in.
What can I say? I'm an ass man.
Okay, good to know. I have another quote before you launch into sitcoms. This one was in the platform. I think the last I checked, it might not be anymore, but this is the quote. We believe that mass liberalism and overspending is crucial for furthering America's interests. The NDF must have control over all of the United States.
So here's the problem.
Can you possibly clarify...
So
what the thought process was on that one.
We released the platform via Google Docs because we're professionals.
Yep.
And then...
Word's expensive. You need to pay to license it. It's a whole thing.
I forgot, maybe. There's a potential existence in which I forgot to change the perms on the Google Doc. Which means potentially former Senator Wonder... could have gone in and wrote that entire section, which did in fact happen. So that was just a little bit of what the kids are calling a troll these days. Remember the things that live under the bridges and ask you questions and you die if you get them wrong, like a troll?
Do I remember them? That.
Yeah. Remember when we went to Narnia together?
I'm remembering why I don't do this with you. This is... Okay, so...
I'm really just impressed.
Just, if we take this in terms of ability to operate Google Docs, should people be concerned that you are an elected member of Congress who has the ability
Absolutely
to, like,
no.
write bills and pass them and, like, affect people's lives?
Like, without, like, the really weird stuff around kids and kissing them.
What?
My thing... Yeah, remember that whole thing of, like, there were, like, videos of Joe Biden kissing his one of his grandchildren on the lips?
I missed you saying Joe Biden. I thought you were talking about you.
Oh, no, I don't do that. That's bad.
That's good.
No, I'm not.
I'm glad to clarify that much, at least.
That part of Joe Biden. Remember when Joe Biden, like, had a lot of gaffes and was, like, kind of just a crazy dude, but he was also really good at his job? That's kind of...
I don't particularly remember that last part.
Okay, well, he was in the Senate for, like, 30 years.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing. Anyways, he probably could have been president one day, honestly. Like, he was Obama's vice.
Not if the Senate was abolished.
He could have been like you. Had 2 weeks in the presidency, got too tired, retired in Maine.
I'm now retired to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, no,
the weather's better.
Is that... So you're... Oh, I guess you are a senator of Dixie. That's right. I did. Were you the one who bought my house in Puerto Rico? Because I sold that a while back.
I hope not. Hope not.
Like, right on the beach.
The one on San Juan on the beach.
In San Juan on the beach. The fucking, you know, it's the house. Look, there's a chance we might have shit in the same toilet, Captain. That's all I'm saying. Actually,
we both worked in the same buildings, and you worked in this studio for a while, so I'm pretty confident that that's happened. I just hope it's not in my current home.
Well,
so moving on to more recent news. As of recording here on Thursday night, the Senate is considering a clean budget that essentially functions as a long-term continuing resolution, which the House passed earlier today. A number of errors were found in that bill, which I mentioned earlier, which are delaying its passage right now because it's going to have to get kicked back to the House. But it seems at least that, finally, the end of this crisis is in sight. Yeah. What are your reflections on the shutdown and how it seems to be ending?
That I will never engage in writing a budget again. No. It was a very painful process. Here's my takeaways from it. I think it's I'm going to go back to a little bit more of a serious note here. I think it's simultaneously a healthy notion for our nation, but also should be, you know, seen with caution. Healthy because gone are the days that we just have a rubber stamp government.
That's true.
We see like 3-page budgets passed in 2 days, which was absurd. Like, that was stupid. We survived, again, because most parties were built with both a libertarian and center-left ideologies in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was never really any backlash or anything. And also you had, like, a long-term stretch of a lot of, Federalist or Republican presidents. So, like, there were so many things that were going on that just created a sense of comfort in just rubber stamping these lackluster budgets to just push them through and we'd be fine. And there wasn't really anything wrong with that. But that's not how we should have operated. And in retrospect, I'm glad that we're back to a time when we can actually debate a budget. That being said,
are we
all
though?
Of this does
like
well.
It seems like there was none of that happening,
exactly.
At all.
Seen with a lot of caution, right? here's the problem. And obviously I'm going to come at this from a left point.
No, of
view
course. I'm not expecting you to agree with me on it.
Right. So from my experience, and this well could be half of the story, and I fully expect it to be half of the story. But from my experience, what happened was, is that in working with the Progress Coalition, and, you know, I think the budget crisis happened like a week or two before the NDF existed. So I was still working with them. I was the deputy majority leader working with them in capacity as an independent representative. And so we were cautious about the administration because we hadn't really heard too much in terms of what they were going to propose as a budget. And so we came up with our own and we put it out. And then the administration didn't put anything out for a while. And it was kind of alarming because at that point we were nearing shutdown and it was really, you know, coming close and the administration hadn't really come out with anything. And then they came out with something.
So you're, I might be getting the timeline wrong here because my elected portion was more recently than that. But I think you might be skipping a couple of continuing resolutions in that timeline.
I am. Yeah. No. That's, there was...
Because there was a point where we are, like, negotiations are occurring.
Right.
We're working on the cooperative budget, and as that's happening, we're passing CRs because negotiations haven't gotten to a finished product yet.
Yeah. Right. So I believe that SysAdmin had two continuing resolutions as we were working through that. The problem started after you got... So I think the second continuing resolution got passed... just after or just before the revelations came out about how the Elkridge budget was, like, severely flawed and all that stuff, really just hadn't, for whatever reason, the administration just wasn't prepared. From the left point of view, they were rushed. They weren't expecting us to come out with a budget in time or a budget at all. And so from our point of view, you see it as, okay, well, they just scrambled to put something together and it's harmful and it's not going to work. And so we, you know, felt a bit justified in that point because we had come out with the budget that we thought was proper and you know, was without a flaw. Obviously, that then turned into a whole nother problem that we're
right, because there were errors discovered in the left budget when you guys weren't necessarily pressed for time. And I think that's so, when the tide kind of turned from, okay, we have a budget ready to go, let's get that budget through, and it switched to, oh my God, we don't have any budget. Let's pass a continuing resolution so that we can put one together. But so, that's when the left coalition, caucus, whatever you're calling yourselves, put your foot down and said, no, we're not passing one. We're passing a budget, even though the budget wasn't ready. So how did that not guarantee a shutdown at that point?
Here's where we came from on that standpoint, is that we... knew that the administration's budget wasn't going to be seen again, right? Like, it never came up again. It was just dead. By that point, it had been thrown to the wayside, and the only budget that we were really dealing with was ours. And so...
Well, sure, it doesn't particularly make sense to negotiate two different budgets.
So this is where my knowledge of everything starts getting a little shaky, because I am not... personally involved in what's going on with the administration or the negotiations with the administration. This is, to my knowledge, and anyone else can, you know, say otherwise, and obviously with reservations because I want to not, you know, leak anything. But to my knowledge, there were a number of left members of Congress, of high-profile left members of Congress who were negotiating the budget. And ultimately... what had happened after the second CR, that was the last one that was proposed by a left member of Congress, and that was SysAdmin's second continuing resolution, that was due to expire. And so the administration was pressing hard on the left because that was right after all of the flaws in the left budget had been revealed. So they were pressing hard, again, to my knowledge, to, as sort of a reaction to that, implement or take away, either implement some stuff that they wanted or take away stuff that we wanted in the budget. And so then that became, there was some contentious point where the left essentially said, those left members who were negotiating essentially said, this is what's going in the budget for us. or we're, you know,
going to shut down the government,
and we're not doing this right. And so the administration said, all right, cool, we'll do it too. And so it became a moment where you just get just this grand moment of gridlock. And it's so fascinating and so phenomenal if it were not so destructive. And so then at that moment you see, okay, the right is proposing a continuing resolution. Well, so then what's going on through our mind is, so they said that they're not negotiating with us on this budget, which means they're
until the government reopens,
continuously pass right. continuing resolutions until, right, exactly. So we're just like, okay, so then we put our foot down here and we want them to re-enter negotiations with us, so we're not passing their continuing resolution, right?
So I want to pause there.
Get a budget done.
Okay, pause there. So the right's position at that point in this shutdown is,
yeah,
we will not continue budget negotiations until the government is reopened with a CR. That's the administration line. The left's position is, we will not open the government until you negotiate with us. Correct. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, so here's where I would disagree with that.
Okay. No, that's why I asked. Because that's outside looking in, that's how it looks.
Yeah. The problem is that at that point, and again, this is from my perspective as deputy majority leader, whatever that gives to the situation, there, after that initial like rift, there was no contact made to even say anything about negotiations. So there wasn't even reaching out saying, okay, if you pass this CR, then we'll go ahead and we'll start negotiating again. And so, you know,
that wasn't communicated. Right,
went immediately to press releases and media or Twitter or stuff like that saying, this is what we're doing. And so then we start to contact them and saying, look, let's negotiate this. We're not going to suspend the rules and pass your continuing resolution. And if you guys aren't like willing to come to the table at all. No, I think there was a failure of communication on both sides at that point. I know in very recently, I think that failure of communication does lie at the feet of the right. And whether that's because at this point, you know, that was like the fifth continuing resolution that attempted to be passed.
The fifth was as soon as this new session began, the Senate passed the fifth.
Right. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is that now, I'm saying right now, the failure of communication lies at the feet of the right. Because, you know, we haven't received any communication from them, nor have they like responded to anything that we've been trying to get at them with. And the right line is like, we're holding the line down. We're not doing anything with a continuing resolution. We're saying, okay, we're not doing your continuing resolution. We're not playing this game with you. We're negotiating a budget. So we're gonna continuously pass this budget with revisions. And you are free to edit this in the Senate. And you are free to continue to give your criticisms towards it, and we will continue to help negotiate that in the public of our government. But if you're not willing to negotiate with us at any other point, why are we doing this, man? You know, if that's what's happening, we don't really see an end to it. So eventually it gets to the point where we're just sitting here saying, okay, we just need to end this, because at this point it was the political calculation of, we can tire them out. And I think both sides had that idea. And so eventually we just sat down and we said, okay, we're going to let this one, we're going to do all of the hurricane aid that we can, and we're going to, you know, do back pay to furloughed workers. And we're going to do all of that. And that's just that part of the budget, and that's it. We're not going to include any of our other stuff, because at that point it just gets too tiresome. Because from our perspective, you know, it's the right saying that they don't want to talk to us at all about doing a budget. And so I think, and this is my neutral press hat going on at this point.
Your press hat over at the Shallot?
Back, right, yeah. Which, by the way, is just an onion, a loose onion that I put on top of my head.
I think, yep. Oh, you're talking. You're literally talking about the hat. I thought you were talking about the shallot is loosely the onion, but you're putting a hat on.
Just the actual whatever the fuck. Putting the neutral party hat on at this point. Personally, and again, this could be because of my own convictions or biases, but I would blame both sides at this point. I think that eventually, you know, after maybe day three or four of the shutdown, we were stuck. And so it was, okay, neither side's going to move. The left's going to keep proposing their budget. The right's going to keep proposing their continuing resolutions. Both are going to open the government if they're passed, but neither side wants to help the other out. And so I personally believe that, you know, this all started because of the fact that the Elkridge administration, perhaps after feeling bad about themselves for rushing a budget, got a little too full of themselves after the left budget started to have errors in it. And I would contend that the errors in the left budget were not as severe as the errors in the Elkridge administration's budget, but of course that could also be debated in public forum. But at that point,
I think even if I accept that for truth, which I don't think we necessarily need to get into it right here, but I think we can agree that either a budget is functioning or it's not, and if a budget has errors, then it's not functioning.
Absolutely.
So the degree of error isn't really worth much if either one isn't usable.
Correct.
So I guess what I'm wondering with that is, how do you get to the point? And you can put your outside looking in wherever it applies or parts that you were involved with, but this is before my time. There were two points where I think it made the most sense for both sides to pass a continuing resolution. The first we've talked about, and that is when it was discovered that the left budget had errors that made it not easily passable. And the deadline was coming very close. And in my mind, it made the most sense in that last hour effort to keep the government open to pass the CR. The left made the decision to vote that down. I don't understand that, because at that time there was no workable budget. The second time was when this most recent election in September, at which point I think both sides were saying, we've staked out our positions, we're going to let the people decide and take that mandate wherever it goes. And the left made ground in the House, and the right made ground in the Senate. So that really gave neither side a mandate to push forward their budget priorities. In my mind, and what I've been saying pretty publicly throughout this process, if you have a situation where neither side has a mandate for their budget priorities, what makes sense is to pass the no-strings continuing resolution. No side gets their political priorities out of it. But the shutdown ends, and then you go back to the drawing table and work out a compromised budget, because neither side has that momentum given by the public.
Once again,
we opened the session, the right did in the Senate, by not attempting to pass a right-wing budget, but by passing a no-strings continuing resolution, which would not give us policy wins, but it would just open the government. And the left immediately took that and threw it out the window to continue trying to pass an unnegotiated budget. So I want to try to formulate this question.
Yeah.
Where did you try to take where did your caucus, and speaking in whatever capacity you can, find yourself a mandate to continue pushing an unnegotiated budget at that point?
Absolutely. I'm going to rework your question here. And
no, please. Yeah.
On both of those points, because I do agree with you in some aspect. I actually, in terms of what we should have done after the left budget had found errors in it, at that point, you know, the mindset on the left was, if we fix it fast enough and we pass it, that's fine. We're golden. It's over, right? Obviously, it was wrong. And I think in retrospect,
well, there just genuinely wasn't time for that.
Right.
The discovery was so late. I don't know that it could practically have been done.
It was the idea of, because we did get it out relatively fast after that. I mean, the government had shut down.
Yes, and I'm just talking literally procedurally. If you think 24 hours in the House, 24 hours in the Senate, and however long it takes for the president to get it, that is too much time before the government would shut down.
Right. So I think the idea on the left was, okay, let the government shut down. We'll take that political blame, but we'll still get our budget across. And then that is like an equilibrium that we find there, right? At that point, I would actually diagnose that as like a political win for the left, because I think the bounties of getting your budget passed far outweigh like a 2 or 3 day shutdown. But obviously that didn't happen, and that was...
Yeah, there seems like a flaw in that math where you run into a Senate and an administration that don't want to pass your budget.
The assumption at that time, I believe, had been that as long as we fixed our budget, then we would be able to get it through. And I think, honestly, probably if we had just gone ahead and done that first continuing resolution following the errors in our budget and done the same thing, that budget probably would have gone through.
I agree.
To be honest, in retrospect, as this is coming to an end, I think that is absolutely the correct political calculation. And I think that, you know, there was an error in our sort of idea of what was going on there. Now, that's not to say at all that, you know, we are entirely to blame for everything, because there is, I think, equally shared blame at this point on both sides.
Oh, I don't know that that is so, borne so out in the polling. The Associated Press put out a report that shows not right. that is not so, the case.
Yeah, allow me to go ahead and get in.
Okay, sure. Yeah, finish your point.
So, first and foremost, the polling had shown a very slim majority in favor of, I believe, in favor of blaming the Progress Coalition, which is roughly equal at that point. I mean, if one side comes out on top, one side comes out on top. But if it's 51-49, it's essentially equal.
I don't know that we got specifics of 51-49.
We didn't.
It showed it was a majority for the Progress Coalition.
It was just slim majority. So we'll go ahead whatever that means is whatever that means. We didn't get an actual number from the Associated Press, but they're
right.
Also, unfortunately, in this day and age, not really known for providing numbers to us. After that September, I think what was very clear was that the political priority for the LRP, whether it's a move that politically benefits them or not, in terms of getting policy passed, the political priority for the LRP was to get a continuing resolution passed. The political priority for the left was to get their budget passed.
Right.
So that, I think, was what was essentially the election was over. And so, unfortunately, when you go back at the results, the problem that you find is that on the state level, in like specific state regions, the elections are remarkably in favor of the left. The problem is then when you go to statewide elections, they're remarkably in favor of the right.
Yeah, and so the right took every statewide race.
Exactly. And so it's wait, is that correct?
Yes, there were. Yes, the Jefferson governorship.
Yeah, yeah,
the Ted in the north, Vidal and Jefferson, myself and Dixie.
The gubernatorial election had its own problems. Jesus, we could do an entire episode on why computer. I shouldn't be in government anymore, but it's a whole other thing. So in districts, in those districts, the left had won remarkably, and so what you saw was a lot of ballots that were not down ballot votes. You saw them at the local level electing progressive leadership, and at the state level electing right leadership.
Right.
And so there is no mandate that you get out of the election.
Right. It seems like people in there made a conscious decision for divided government, which in my mind, and I think
stupid.
In the minds of quite a while, well, that was not where I was going.
it's fucking stupid.
It demands, that is a demand from the public for a compromise budget. That is saying we expect neither side, because what the left asked for this whole time was we're going to give our budget without negotiation to the right, and you are going to pass it or else.
Whereas and the public is stupid, a compromise budget is what comes out of that. So that is ultimately the conception of the clean budget from our coalition. It just took a few days to create that.
Okay, so here's my real question at the end of this, because we're kind of getting to the point of this is like a policy question.
Yeah.
Do you think that the public is in a better place having a budget that has basically no policy in it besides funding. And I think everyone's supportive of back pay and hurricane relief, so I'm putting that in with that.
It'd be hard,
but the titles that people went in trying to negotiate to get into the budget on the left and the right. Do you think that the public is better off without any of those, or would they be better off had we passed a continuing resolution however many ages ago and then actually got some of the titles in from each side so that we could actually get some policy change? Because from my perspective right now, what we did is, for all practical purposes, because we've been pushing ever since the first one was done, which had conditions on it, but a no conditions, no strings, CR. And that's basically what this budget is. It's just a CR that continues for the rest of the term, which is past halfway done now. And I can't really conceptualize, other than we're done attempting to negotiate, how about we all just call it a wash and fund the government, the policy benefit of not trying to put any policy in.
So here is my commentary on what you're saying. What we see in recent history is that a lot of the public opinion is largely shaped by politicians, or former politicians or justices or stuff like that, in the public sphere voicing their opinions. And that's a lot of what the public opinion is shaped on. That's a lot of what you see on Twitter, right? So, and media organizations. Media organizations are remarkably owned by politicians.
I've done plenty of little monologues on that.
Right,
I'm sure you're still a religious listener to the show, but that's a pet peeve.
Here's the thing. I think, in fact, I am very confident in saying that I think the public is better off because of this, and I think that the political citizenry is much worse off. And here's why.
Okay.
The public has seen, first of all, what you do when you split your fucking votes. You just get sad.
Well, ideally you vote for people to have half a brain and compromise, and instead we have one side demanding a unilateral surrender from the other.
And the other doing the exact same.
No. That is just false. If it was the same, it would be the right-wing Senate passing a right-wing budget and saying, here, left, pass this. Instead, we passed a no-strings bill that would not have right policy in it.
We can get back to this. I will go ahead and entertain this argument. I do want to get through this first.
Okay.
I do think that the public is better off because of this. Not only because we see what happens when a shutdown takes too long, eventually the government just passes a large, essentially just an allocation bill to departments, and then also like very universally supported things like furloughed worker back pay and hurricane aid. I think that the public honestly doesn't affect them too much, because let's be real,
didn't have their jobs this whole time.
Correct, and they didn't have their jobs, and it fucking sucks. Obviously they're gonna get paid back for it, but that's being out of work for that long is stressful and it's horrible.
It doesn't help if you need groceries in the meantime. But
right, it doesn't. And so I am interested in creating a federal worker mental health program that's guaranteed, but that's something that
does that help with groceries? Come
public, Jesus Christ, dude! Just let me get through this.
just curious.
I understand where your concerns are coming from, and it's horrifying that a lot of those federal workers had to go through without groceries. I still maintain that either side had an opportunity and this, and the other side did. And that sucks. But I do think the public is going to be better because of it, because the public is going to at least get this through. And honestly, a lot of that policy that was included in both of those budgets, you'll probably see that policy show up again as just standalone bills. And that's fine. Here's the thing, though. In November, I think that anyone involved in this the entire way through is going to have an exceptionally hard time getting reelected. Just how it goes. I don't think that anyone really. I would not be surprised if about half of the incumbents that were from both sessions end up not in Congress in this next session starting in November. And I do think that this was insanely harmful for the political citizenry of the United States. But I think the public benefits from that because then you get a lot of new politicians entering into government, right? We all know that regardless of who's in government, you're still probably going to get the same bills through regardless because, frankly, even people who aren't in government write bills for people who are in government. I mean, you've had organizations like ALEC and other stuff like that exist throughout throughout history. You're going to get all of that the same. But you're going to be able to deny a lot of the careers from those politicians that really fucked you up in that. So I don't think the general public is as hurt as the political citizenry is. And I know this was like the most befuddling and confusing confusing way of doing this. And you know, I don't mean to say that going without groceries for 3 weeks is a great thing. It's absolutely not.
But God, we can agree on that.
Yeah, but this is a great lesson. I have a very pessimistic and realistic way that I think just pessimistic, straight up pessimism, in terms of a way of looking at this. But this is what you fucking get. Like, this is stupid. It's absolutely stupid, and this shouldn't have happened. This none of this should have happened. Frankly, what should happen next time is that there should just be one budget that is in existence, and it should probably come from the administration. Every negotiation should just happen on that from there. And I think there's a lot of things that the left fucked up. A lot of stuff happened. A lot of stuff the right fucked up. And a lot of stuff happened with them. And then it just came down to neither side wanted to back down because both of them wanted to show how big their dick was to the other. And so it became a dick measuring contest, and then you got the clean budget, and now we're going forward with this. So I do think this was a good thing for the public because now you realize what's going to happen when you essentially elect idiots into Congress and into the White House.
All right. I'm not entirely sure how to respond to actually the shutdown was good for the people. But
yeah, it's a very weird way of wording it, and you have to look at it from a certain perspective. Otherwise, it looks horrible, and I recognize it. I recognize that, but I still think that this, unfortunately, a lot of healthy things for a democracy and a lot of healthy things for a government aren't good for people in general, and their like general day-to-day welfare. It's good for their general like future welfare. And a lot of things happen there, right? Like, there's a lot of examples of that. But if you're looking at this from a purely, like, and that, not like a political science perspective, but just like political perspective, this was a healthy thing. This was something we had to go through.
We have our disagreements there, but I don't think we're going to solve them tonight.
Oh, probably not. That's fine.
All right, that was my list of questions, and so much more than my list of questions.
Oh, yes.
Is there anything else that you would like to hit on while we're here?
Yeah, so I do have a few questions for you.
Yeah, shoot. It usually doesn't flip, but we could try.
When are you announcing your campaign in November for the presidency?
My campaign, if I recall, is February? Is that how that works?
February?
March, maybe?
Your campaign for the
mayor? March. It'll be March. You want to run for
president in March?
My term ends in March.
Oh, so you're pulling... Jesus Christ, don't do this. We know you're running in November. This is... See, okay, look. Ever since, like... I don't know. I think Garland was the last one to... Or the first one to do this, where he was, like, really incessant... You were his VP, you remember, when he was really incessant on, like, not saying anything during the northern gubernatorial election. You're not up for election again.
Till right? March.
Like, exactly. So why are you worried about announcing a presidential campaign? It's not going to impact how you do in a campaign.
My complete focus right now is on my positions within the administration and within the Senate and getting this crisis done with.
I'm calling it right now. To the people who are listening,
you can call whatever you would like. You declared me the winner in the first 5 minutes.
How have you survived this long? I am so impressed. Congratulations to you. We only have 2 members in the studio audience right now. We started
our last episode was longer. I think we did an hour 15 the first time we did this, and I cut out a half hour of it.
We are continuing to go. I still have a few more questions after this, but I'm calling it right now. You're running for president.
You can call whatever you like.
I see. Look, the people in the studio audience are clapping. They're agreeing with me.
That is not happening.
You can hear them.
That is you.
Wow, they're clapping. Can you hear that?
That is you. I'm watching you do that.
They want you to run for president, Kevin.
I understand that this is an audio format, but you are clapping right now.
Your own
and
survey.
While I appreciate your I appreciate your support and your claps in favor of me.
Again, I will put this down right now for anyone.
I'm gonna leave it in.
Cabin is probably the only member of the right who I would support for president. And be very comfortable putting my name out there supporting for president.
Yeah, I will consider if I.
But I would do that
for whatever reason. Chose to put myself forward again. I will see if I can run joint LRP and NDF.
Of course you would.
And I can just take your nomination also. That sound good?
I have no. I completely tuned out what you said. What did you say?
Well, that's kind of rude.
I do it a lot. Don't worry.
What is your next question?
Right. So the next question. So you recently started a TPR polling again.
Yeah,
a couple of them,
because I was looking at the 29 polling, and it was 87 questions, and that was too much to get through.
Consolidate that.
So I like to do like 5.
I have actually considered restarting Veritas Post again just to do more of that.
Dear God, let it die.
Never.
It's died twice. Let it die.
Look, we got to go back to the truth with James Order. I feel like at this
point. That was a good show.
Have you ever been to Epcot? There's one ride.
I have not.
There's one ride with a purple, like, dragon or dinosaur, and I never remember what it is, but it's in, like, the right part of Epcot before you get to, like, the worlds.
I'm glad that I very clearly separated the part where I was prepping questions and where I'm letting you just talk off the rails, because now we've entered the Epcot stage.
Look, it's impressive that you still do this with me. And I promise I probably would not survive anywhere, but because I'm in the North and because these people love me, but I feel like this is also something expected up there, that this is fine. Anyways, so in your own poll for the TPR, stuff like that. And first of all, I don't want to invite me back for an actual analysis. As we've seen, I can get serious at some point.
I think it'll take me another year before I work up the nerve to invite you back.
That makes sense. I'm milking all the time that I have. You actually scored the highest and or lowest, whatever the fuck you want to consider it as, on your own.
Yeah, so for those who didn't see it, the way that we structured our poll of the presidential preference, it wasn't the way that 29 did it. It wasn't pick your favorite candidate. It wasn't choose one candidate. It was, I listed all the federal incumbents on the left and the right, and I just said, rank your preference, one out of however many there are. I think on the right it was 11, on the left it was 14. Yep. And then average together with our likely voter model, how each party would prefer candidates and how the voter base overall would prefer candidates. So, no, I did not, like, quote-unquote, win. But because that wasn't how the question was structured.
No, absolutely. I absolutely do not think that. I don't mean to say this as to assume that you rigged this for yourself. But I
Thanks.
Do want to go down.
I'm glad that wasn't the accusation.
Yeah. No. I want to make that very clear, because I understand if I'm going a little bit rampant, that could be assumed here. So I want to put that in clear language before I do anything. Actually ranked the highest overall. But specifically, you garnered a very interesting amount of support. I think the next person, yeah. So you scored a 2.8 with the LRP, right? And mm-hmm. one is the best on this. The next person down is Senator One-Eyed Jack with a 4.4 from the LRP. So you have a mandate from your own party.
I appreciate you reading my polls to me.
I love it. And so you were also second behind Senator Ted Dett in terms of who any GLP member would vote for. And obviously Ted Dett being a member of the left, we can understand the affinity there. You were also ranked first by the NDF, and you were, in terms of independent voters, I think second again, but this time to Senator One-Eyed Jack.
So yeah, that's what's right.
Now this is right-wing nominees in, I'm reading your poll correctly. I'm not going to fuck it up.
It's a table. Tables are hard sometimes. You're not making a lick of sense tonight. So I need to double check.
If you listen to me talk, sometimes it's wrong. I did just to say that the shutdown was good for people, without really doing a great deal of clarifying.
You did say that.
A lot of what I say can be wrong. Now, President Elkridge was fourth behind Senator One-Eyed Jack and Pepper Potts being second and third in this poll. So,
is this overall or LRP?
Overall.
Okay.
In the LRP, you were first, One-Eyed Jack was second, and I think Elkridge was third.
That's what I was seeing also.
Potts, I don't think, scored as well. I think she was like fourth.
Fifth, maybe?
Yeah, I think Adala did better then.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, do you see this as confidence enough to at least admit that you are interested in pursuing an opportunity here, like starting an exploratory committee or something into the logistics of running for president in November?
No, what I see this is, as of September 10th, if I entered the race that day, I think I would have had a pretty good shot. And I think if I chose to, I could take another one, I guess. Tomorrow I'll be a week ahead there, so if I could do it again, I would probably have a relatively decent base if I decided to. However, feasibility of a campaign only matters up to a certain extent. There's a lot of other factors that play there. And absolutely. I think seeing a poll that says I might do well if I were going to does not predict anything in terms of whether I want to attempt that again.
So if you saw four TPR polls in a row, like weekly polls,
yep,
getting us into like the first week of October, and at that point the numbers hadn't shifted too much and you're still sitting between like a 2 and a 4 mm-hmm. on your likely voter scale, right, in first place, at that point, do you decide to start pursuing this?
I guess that's you're interpreting the use of this poll differently than I am from a candidate standpoint. And you came out relatively okay yourself, but...
Yeah, that was frightening. I don't think people are paying too much attention to me.
No, we'll see if... Maybe I should poll after this podcast releases and see if those numbers move. But...
I guarantee you it won't move that much because I think the only people who are listening to it are the people who are enjoying it in general from the right.
Anyway...
I really don't know how much this is going to skew public opinion. I'd be very impressed if I get, like... ripped on in media, unless you like publish this with a little anecdote saying that I said the shutdown.
Oh, I always do a little blurb at the start when I
should.
When I post these,
you should put in there that I supported the shutdown.
Yes, that would
or
be
put
wise.
That I sexually identify as Bill Clinton defending his 1994 crime bill to the NAACP in 2016.
You make it so difficult to have a serious conversation. All I'm saying is that this poll really only matters. From a candidate standpoint, it's interesting from a public standpoint just to see where the voter base is. But from a candidate standpoint, all this really matters for is if, say, Ted and System both declared their candidacies. What I can look at in this poll is that the LRP says Ted probably has a better shot than System does. So Ted, if his other option is System, should probably run if he's considering it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean much if you take everybody in that pool, because I can guarantee you we are not going to have 11 candidates, including Rat Randy, declare their candidacies.
No. I haven't seen him in a while.
I haven't either, but he popped up on this poll for the GLP.
I bet he has IBS.
Okay, that's. I think that's where I'm going to draw the line of what I think that's where I'm going to draw the line of what I'm going to let you talk about on this show. Let's just you keep, let's why, keep why can't bodily functions out of it.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, so moving along to
okay.
My next question.
Oh, that's right. You're driving this conversation now. I was like, where am I trying to move things? But I'm not in charge anymore. I haven't been in charge for about an hour now.
Look, you started the podcast and you lost control. You admitting that you wanted me on the podcast was...
Oh, God. We're at an hour and 5 minutes.
See, you said an hour and 15 minutes for the last one, so I gotta break...
You took that as a challenge?
So we got like 15 more minutes to go. Strap in.
Okay.
So why did you return to politics? What was the main motivator there? Because you...
The motivator was a political crisis in Puerto Rico that demanded someone who could bring it back to stability, and that put me back in a political role.
Okay, and so after that, you thought the next step would be to go to the Senate in Dixie.
Correct.
That was the next logical step in that. Okay.
After reincorporation, yes.
So, right. So, do you and your partner still have a place in Maine?
After the last conversation, I am mortified to talk about any of my addresses for fear of what you will do to them.
No, I'm interested because the last time the Dixie public saw you, you were getting in a helicopter to go to Maine.
And I was going to Washington at that point. I was going to Washington, not Maine.
Well, technically, Washington. You definitely went to Maine first.
We went to Washington first, and then we house shopped.
Okay. Well, anyways, regardless, do you still have a place in Maine? Do you still live in the north sometimes? Do you like it up there? Was it nice?
I do
Did
like
you
it up there.
Become buddies with Stephen King?
No. The weather was nice sometimes. The weather was less nice other times. As an Iowa native, I'm kind of familiar with that.
I'm from Ohio. I have no idea what nice weather is.
No, you guys just never get it.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not great.
I'm very happy where I'm at. I was glad to play a role in carrying out reincorporation. And it's nice to be back in Dixie.
Absolutely. It's just really, have you had contact with JGT Webb by any chance?
Not with any recency.
Interesting. I wonder what he's doing.
Couldn't tell you because, as I mentioned, I've had no recent contact with him at all.
You should talk to him. I feel like you two would be good friends.
Yeah.
Any contact with JMP recently?
Not at all.
Well, that's kind of disappointing. I kind of was expecting one of those two, or like Pullman. Remember Pullman? I expected one.
Are you trying to recast the people to chase me out of Dixie? Is that what we're doing?
No, I'm just remembering all of the people who chased you out of Dixie. Do you remember Lohengrim? I just asked you,
and then you said no, and then you said that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't know why you trust anything I say at this point.
Oh, I don't know that I trust it. I'm recording it and publicizing it, but trust is not strictly a word that I would use.
How you doing? Here's the thing. Is that I think this is a lovely, lovely time. I think your podcast is doing well.
I appreciate that.
You should post more of it. Not really actually coming out weekly.
I know.
Like bi-weekly or bi-monthly at this point?
I'm getting better than bi-monthly.
Yeah. You're getting... Yeah, you are. You're getting... Oh, who was... You had Elk and then Rosa Berry. You had Rosa Berry on.
Yeah, let me look at my feed here.
About the Workers' International Party 2 days before...
Well, that was my hope. I'm hoping this... That's my one nice thing of having this delayed a little bit from when the NDF started, is I was nervous that I was going to have a little repeat where I would have a conversation about a new party, and then by the time I got around to editing the episode, the party had ended.
Yeah, that was kind of That was bad.
But now you've got a couple weeks under your belt, and I'm not terribly concerned about it.
Yeah, we're looking healthy.
I had Judge Bo, I had Howard Elkridge, and then I had Roseberry. And now you're here.
It's a very interesting cast. So when you do your presidential campaign, will you do the same continuity slogan that Elkridge had, or are you going to go for something different?
This feels loaded, just by a little bit. I don't know that I strictly had a slogan for my current or for my recent Senate campaign other than open the government. I don't know that I'm going to develop one by my next Senate campaign in March.
I'm talking about your presidential campaign.
Sloganeering was not super my thing. It's just never.
You should try it.
It's not how I really operate.
Actually, I do have a legitimate question for you that just came to mind.
Thank God.
we're just trying to get the time out so we can beat the last record.
Mm-hmm.
This is something.
I don't know that you remember how much of the last one I had to cut. So you got to take that into account.
I'm just trying to beat. Assuming you don't cut any of this, I'm just trying to beat the last time.
Yeah.
Back when you ran with Garland on his ticket, you certainly had a campaign entirely laid out before that to run for president yourself.
I did. It was public. I had endorsements.
It was very much public. What were the factors that caused you to lean into a bipartisan ticket, and what is your opinion of the viability of a bipartisan ticket again in this current political climate?
So at the time, Garland and I were relatively similar figures, just mirrored. I was the left wing right winger, and he was the right wing left winger. So in some ways we were closer than a lot of the other running mates that either of us could have had ideologically, and we were able to complement each other relatively well. Our communication was good, all that. The inconveniently timed collapse of the Federalists in the middle of my campaign was not helpful, and I didn't know that there was a lane, so we worked out that we would make a good pair. We could govern with input from the left and the right without going too terribly far in either direction. And I think that's pretty much what we did. Now, in terms of viability today, Congress can't even come together to pass a funding bill without strings attached. So no, I don't think that you could find two people who would be willing to go on a ticket together. And if you did, by some miracle, I think their parties would eat them alive.
So to that, I would ask, then what would you think of the viability of an independent candidate in today's political climate?
We got an example of it in the last election. April Kennedy did relatively well. I think better than many expected, considering the partisan divides that we have. But ultimately, it wasn't terribly close. And I don't know, considering all the flaws that happened in the Steb campaign, I think that was one of the weaker runs that the left could have put up. So assuming you get rid of those issues, granted that's before the Puerto Rico mess, but just looking at his discussions of a joint ticket, I think that put a big dent in the left's viability, and it opened up a lane for an independent. So without a major, major error like that from a partisan candidate, I don't see a lane. That's always potential to change. Like I said, back when I was running, I definitely saw a lane in the Federalists, and then the Federalists up and disappeared. So things shift, but the way things are today, I don't see it.
Right. So finally, I do want to touch on the current leadership in the Libertarian Republican Party.
Why don't you just start a podcast again? Because now you've just overtaken mine to ask me questions. Like, I would come on,
yeah, I feel like
and we could do this somewhere else. But
You should just have me on like the last 10 minutes of every one of your podcasts so I can just ask my questions, and I feel like it would just benefit both parties.
We can talk about it.
Anyways, it's off the air. Weekly cabin fever.
I know. Fever we already did this. Order. Oh, I thought you were your question was making fun of it not being weekly again.
Oh, no.
Carry on.
So, I fucking lost my train of thought there a little bit. In the current Libertarian Republican leadership, would you be able to do a diagnosis on the differences between the Libertarian Republican Party and the Federalists? And specifically hit on the difference that we have found here in whether or not social conservatism has died. Because I do feel like that was a focal point for the Federalists, whether that was an expressed focal point or more of a little bit more of, you know, using dog whistle politics there to emphasize it. I do still think it was absolutely vital to that. I personally don't find that as much within the Libertarian Republican Party, and I frankly find that the leadership in it post-Valerie is really, I think, instrumental in creating that idea, sans Sandoval. So what is your diagnosis of that? Do you agree, and could you give a sort of opinion on whether you think social conservatism is dead in the nation?
So I think, and my timeline's a little bit iffy here. You are welcome to correct me if your memory serves better than mine does. But yeah. The biggest distinction on a practical level between the LRP and the Federalists is the lack of opposition on the right. Because in Federalist times, once again, if memory serves, we were battling with the conservatives, we were battling with the classical liberals at some point in there.
Well, even before that, you had a good stretch of dominance by yourselves.
We had, yeah, Old Dominion was in there at some point, and that really was the hard social conservative politics. So at this point, I don't know that necessarily has a voice, and the Federalists were able to define themselves more clearly in opposition to that when social conservatism had a more active voice in the public. Now, I think with the LRP, we've kind of, for practical purposes, stamped out that effect. The choice amendment is through, and that was really the last big fight between conservatives and liberals on the social spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
That's been won and it's done for. Are there still social conservatives out there? Sure. That's reality. That's how it goes.
Right.
In terms of political efficacy, they're way, way, way down. And I don't... There's paths that open up all the time. And to kind of call back to the last question of things change on a dime. But we've had such a long stretch of leftward shift on social issues.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways bolstered by the political right.
Absolutely.
In criminal justice, in social justice.
Totally with libertarian economics and left social policies.
Yeah.
Is that both sides bolstered the other.
Right. And I'm thinking, you know, end of the death penalty, a lot of criminal justice changes, my own pet projects of ending mandatory minimums, cash bail.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be a few years ago. Pretty unthinkable policies to enact nationwide.
Absolutely.
And that's the nation that we're living in now. So, could we potentially return at some point? Sure. I don't see a gradual path to that coming back. I think if it was ever going to, it would be a very major shift that I don't really see happening in the visible future.
Interesting. So then, final question. What do you think the biggest distinction is between the left and the right at this point, especially since both sides have created parties that are essentially the amalgamations of each side complementing the other over the course of history? And so at this point, both sides while they have their differences, are also both remarkably similar. So what would, if you could find one or two or three main differences between these parties, what would you find them as? And I'm not asking you to find them between the GLP and the NDF. You can consider that one party and just have the left coalition and the right in the LRP.
I think the biggest fault line that I see developing in recent election cycles is the desire to shift taxation policy again on the left and the desire to maintain it on the right. Whether that is done for efficacy reasons, which I don't strictly think is the case, or for more ideological reasons in terms of some deserve to be paying more than others. I think that's the biggest split right now because we've stopped legislating on social policy. And when it comes to economic policy, you either have a handful of members who have pet issues that they get so far into the minutia on that no one else can particularly follow it unless it's really thoroughly explained to them. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty easy to understand, I want to tax these people and not these people. We're seeing a bit of a foreign policy split, but that is a fairly recent phenomenon over the last couple of administrations. And again, I don't, like, there's been shifts, particularly in the last few months, but I think a lot of that is needing to find places to oppose the opposition on, because, as we said, there are so many similarities between the sides.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, cool. I think we have beaten our record. You can confirm if that's
let's see here. Hour 20, I think we did it.
Yeah. It would have been, so hour 20.
It only took you taking over the interview for me.
Exactly.
Which isn't typically how this works.
Thank you so much. I'm the host here. No, thank you so much for tuning in to the weekly. My name
if anything, I'm just going to add one over at the end. Public record. No. This is not how this works. Please leave my studio before I call the police.
I kind of planned on sleeping here.
You know that, no.
Chairs were really comfortable.
I know, you've been in them for far too long. These usually last 20 minutes.
Ah, well, you invited me for a you have to fill up like my podcast time for a whole year.
No, you need to start your show again. Like you monologue better than I monologue. I'm trying to get it back, but that's never been my skill set. I ask questions and I let people talk for 15 of the 20 minutes.
That was the crux of my shows with that I would monologue against, particularly against John Smith. I think that was my...
I'm pretty sure I got a segment in there at some point.
Oh, yeah, you definitely did.
Okay. Well, I'm going to need to cut the vast majority of this at the end. Just so I can get my own plug, Congressman Order, thank you again. It was as wild as always. And I'll see you next year.
I don't think there's possibly anything left to say after that. Please send in guest suggestions or topics you'd like me to talk about solo now that Order has vacated the premises. While you're at it, subscribe wherever you listen to have the next episode delivered straight to you. The Weekly, and to be clear, that's The Weekly with Cabin Fever, is a public record podcast.